Beruchim Abayim Rabotai, welcome to another edition of our Thursday night class. Tonight we are studying Parashat Terumah. These Parashiyot, Terumah, Tesaveh, maybe Kitisa, not so bad, but Vayakel Pekudeh are in the rabbinic speech industry. These parashiyot are considered nightmares. It's like, you know, you have to give a derasha from a blueprint. They give you a blueprint of the Mishkan. You know, they put the table here, put the menorah there, put the mizbeach there. Here's the dimensions. And it weighs this much gold, and it weighs this much silver, and he gave that, and he gave that. And go ahead, make a derasha on this. So, you know, even if you could eke out something in Terumah, they get you in Tetzaveh. You know, they get you the next week. And then even if somehow, miraculously, you divert them to Purim, you have Vayakel and Pekudeh that come and bite you at the end. So, I mean, this separates the men from the boys when it comes to derashot. I personally have not been successful to give inspiring classes on Terumah and Tetzaveh. So you'll bear with me and see what we came up with. Hazmat Shalom, nobody should get the impression. The Torah is chock full of information. The Torah is jammed and full to capacity. It's just that the rabbi here in this case has a difficult time extracting from the well. They haven't found the geyser yet in Parashat Terumah, but we're still searching for it. We'll let you know. We'll keep you posted. In any event, our Parashah talks about the construction of the Mishkan. In English they call it the Tabernacle. To make things simply, it was a portable synagogue that moved with the Jewish people. Eventually it was replaced with a Beit HaMikdash, which was a more permanent structure in Yerushalayim. Of course, the project was a very costly one. The third Beit HaMikdash actually is going to come down ready built, but the Mishkan was indeed a project that had to be supported by the community. And the Torah tells us how the Nidive Lev, the generous ones amongst the Jewish people, stepped forward and they made sizable donations. It was the first appeal in Jewish history that the solicitor, in this case being Moshe Rabbeinu, said, enough. Certain things in life only happen once. That I can guarantee will never happen again in the history. And there's never enough. There's always something else you can use the money for. And also, you know, you can question the veracity of the solicitor. In Moshe Rabbeinu's case, yeah, once he met the quota, finished. We have enough. And he told the people, you know, die. So it was a very successful campaign. Our rabbis make some important diyukim, observations on the text of how the charity was given. The most famous observation, obviously, is what the Torah tells the Jewish people, the Beret B'nai Yisrael, V'yikhu li terumah. Pasuk says, take for me a donation. The seemingly more proper word would have been V'yitnu li terumah. They usually give a donation. You don't take a donation. The Mefarshim explain that in giving charity, you're really not giving anything, if you think about it, because everything is the property of God. And all the money is God's money. So you're not giving because it's not yours to give. What you're really doing is you're transferring. What you're doing is you're taking the money from point A and you're putting it at point B. Hence, v'yikhu li terumah. So then where is the reward in giving charity? The reward is in the transfer, which is in the fact that you made a conscious decision, because you do have free will, to donate the money. The nature of people are to be a little stingy a little tight when it comes to their possessions, especially their money. And therefore, the fact that you overcame the natural tendency to be frugal and to be tight-fisted, and you opened up and you gave, so that's where you get the credit. But it's not that you're getting the credit for giving anything that's yours, because really, everything's the property of God. Even though, I will tell you, that I did see brought down from the Ben Ish Hai, that he says that one who's careful in making berachot gets credit as if he gave his money, which is a different level. What is the connection? So he says like this. He bases it on a pasuk in Navi. The pasuk says, "Hamitnadevim ba'am barichu Adonai." Those that are generous in the Jewish nation, bless God. What's the explanation? Before you eat, the food belongs to God. Hashamayim, shamayim. I'm sorry. La Hashem ha'aretz umnoah. The earth and all its things belongs to God. After you make a beracha, the person takes possession and it becomes his. The ha'aretz natan lebnei adam. So hence, making berachot actually gives you an acquisition on your assets. So therefore he says, if a person is true to making berachot, so therefore not only does the apple belong to him, or the rice that he's eating, but berachot give a person acquisition on all his assets. So now when you're giving tzedakah to the ani, God considers it as if you're giving your own. Hence, hamitnadevim b'Hashem b'Abraham, those that donate, barichu Hashem, bless God, in order to get two credits. Credit of giving from your money, and credit for making the decision and overcoming your natural tendency not to give. That being said, Hachamim do tell us that God gives the money of the poor man and puts it in the rich man's pocket. You have to know that. And in all your pockets, there's some of the money that does not belong to you. God makes you, we'll say, the trustee of the tzedakot. And therefore, Hachamim tell us, since it doesn't belong to you, if you don't give it to the charity, eventually you're going to lose it anyway, because it's not yours. So you're not going to benefit by keeping that money. You know, the miser thinks, alames, I won't give. Little does he know that eventually it'll cost him in dentists, it'll cost him in lawyers, it'll cost him in, his car will get damaged, God forbid. It'll cost him. The money's gonna leave his pocket, so you might as well give it to charity in order that you don't have to lose it for nothingness. Gemara tells the story of Rabbi Yohanan. He had a dream about one of his nephews. He was supposed to lose 700 zuzim that year, 700 coins, gold coins. So he went to his nephew, without telling him details of the dream, he told him to give charity this year. The nephew gave 683 coins to charity. That was his allotment that he gave. Sure enough, before Rosh Hashanah, tax collectors came to the nephew. The nephew got all scared. The tax collectors are going to clean me out. Rabbi Yochanan says, don't worry, they're not taking more than 17 coins from you. He says, how do you know 17 coins? He says, I had a dream. He says, you were supposed to lose 700. You gave 683, so therefore 17 coins. Well, sure enough, kakav. So you see over here, there's a certain gizera. So you might as well give, because it's going to be taken away from you anyway. So you might as well get credit. When you give it to the electrician, you don't get reward for that. When you give it to the orthodontist, you don't get credit for that. But when you give it for tzedakah, at least for tzedakah medetan, at least the tzedakah stands for eternity. Now that being said, before we get into the different types of givers, the Mishnah tells us, Arba midot benotnei tzedakah. There are basically four types of people when it comes to giving tzedakah. And the Mishnah lists them. You have one guy that likes to give, but doesn't want anybody else to give. This guy has a problem. There's another guy that he doesn't like to give, but he likes others to give. He also has a problem. The third guy is a Hasid. He likes to give, and he likes when others give as well. The fourth guy is a Rasha. The fourth guy, he doesn't like to give, and he doesn't want any other people to give as well. The Mishnah calls these people Arba Midot Benotne Tzedakah. These are the four type of givers. Now, I never understood this Mishnah, because two out of the four are not givers. So the heading of this Mishnah doesn't make too much sense. Which means you have one guy that doesn't like to give, but he wants others to give. And you have a fourth guy, he don't want to give, and he don't want others to give. Is that a giver of tzedakah?
No.
You have two givers, you got two deadbeats. So why does the Mishnah say, Arba midot benotne tzedakah? That's a good question. I see none of you from your reaction care about this question too much as I do. But I'm going to answer it anyway. It doesn't bother me. One day it'll bother you and you'll come back and you'll hear the answer. That's fine. The point is, if it bothers me is the main thing. It doesn't matter if it doesn't bother you. So I'm giving the class. This is we set the agenda over here. In any event, so I saw beautiful Al-Sheikh. He says like this, the essential nature of every Jew is to be religious. Now, the Jew might not know that that's his essential goal, but deep down in his subconscious, every Jew is good. He might have some cobwebs on his neshama, and you might have to, shave away at it, and you gotta shake him up a little, but essentially, every Jew is good. Kol Yisrael yeshtem halik la'olam abba. He goes so far to say, halakha, if a Jew makes a nedir, he says, I do not want to benefit from any circumcised Jew. He makes a nedir. Anybody that's circumcised, I want to have no hana'ah. Halakha says not only can he have hana'ah from the circumcised, but even from the uncircumcised he can have hana'ah. Why? Because even an uncircumcised Jew is good. Problem is he doesn't know he's good yet. But deep down he's also considered a Jew. So similarly they say every Jew is charitable. And therefore, Gemara says, one of the telltale traits of a Jew is what? Rahmanim. Gomle Hasadim. Jews by nature have a gene that they're merciful and they're benevolent. And therefore even the non-givers, that's only because they have inner barriers inside of them and they suffer resistance. But ultimately they're also called Notne Tzedakah. That's the Al-Sheikh. But I like what the rabbi from Lublin said to explain this Mishnah. He said, even the guy that doesn't give and doesn't want others to give, he's not as bad as the fifth guy. There's a fifth guy that the Mishnah doesn't say. Because even that fourth guy in the Mishnah list, he's Rasha, but he has a redeeming factor. You know what his redeeming factor is? He's open and upfront with the collector. He says, listen, beat it. Don't waste my time, you're not getting anything from me, and I'm calling all my friends, and I'm telling them not to give you. Alright, fine. At least the collector knows where he stands. How much time does he waste with this guy? 30 seconds. So at least he's generous in his candidness. But the fifth guy that the Mishnah doesn't talk about, he comes along and he holds the collector on a rope. Yeah, come tomorrow. The guy comes tomorrow to his office, sits in the lobby for a half hour, finally has a meeting with him. I don't know, I'll see. And after a week or two of negotiations and back and forth, the end of the conversation is, it's not for me. So what did you lure me into this? What did you waste my time? So that guy would not be a Noten Tzedakah. He doesn't give money, but he also wastes the time of the solicitor. At least the guys in the Mishnah, they might not give their money, but at least they're straightforward. Beat it, you're not getting anything. Okay, good, not getting anything. At least there's no bitul. So he's a noten in the fact that he is honest. Now, the first guy the Mishnah talks about, what's the psychology behind him? He wants to give, he doesn't want anybody else to give. This man suffers from an inflated ego. He wants all the kavod for himself, that he should be the only one that has his name in lights. He seeks all the adulation and all the glory. You know, if you have a chandelier, so each light bulb doesn't have too much value because it's just one of many. But if you're in a dark room and there's just one bulb, so that bulb enjoys all the glory. And that's what this guy is. This guy over here, he hungers for publicity. And he strives for high honor. And therefore he doesn't want anybody to write a check. If he sees somebody else writing a check, he prays to Borei Olam that he comes down with writer's cramp, so he can't write the check. Or he comes down with a sudden arthritis or paralysis, because he wants to enjoy the kavod. Now this guy's not Lashem Shamayim. He might be very generous, but who loses? Number one, the Aniyim lose. Because he doesn't care about the Aniyim. He cares about himself. And therefore, he wants to just give, but nobody else to give. But if the poor people would be able to enjoy other people's donations, they would have much more. Secondly, he robs others from their ability to enjoy the berachot of tzedakah. When a person gives tzedakah, he gets blessing. The pasuk says venatenu. Venatenu is a palindrome. Palindrome is a word that can be read both forward and backwards. Like the word race car. Race car is read forward and backwards. It's the only thing you're going to remember in the whole class tonight. Race car. Alright, listen, it's also something. This is
Rabbi Mansour said.
Rabbi Mansour said Rabbi Mansour's a palindrome. I didn't know this. This hadush. In any event, so you see over here what? Venatenu. You give this way, you get the other way. You give, you get. So this guy, he tells people, no, I'm taking it myself. He doesn't want to share the mitzvah, so he robs them from the return, from the berakah. Furthermore, the pasuk says in Tehillim, Hashem selecha al yad yaminecha. God is my shadow over my right arm. Which means, when a person gives tzedakah, he takes his right hand and he extends it towards the ani. Hashem selecha, God is your shadow al yad yaminecha. Which means, when you extend your hand this way, God, who is your shadow, extends His hand the other way. Hence, it's a give and take relationship. There was one wealthy man that gave a lot of money to charity. His friends asked him, you give so much away, how do you still have so much? So he says, because as I shovel the money out, God shovels the money in. But there's only one thing, God's shovel is bigger than mine. And therefore, there's beracha. So this guy that stops other people from giving, he causes them to lose out on beracha. Then you have the second guy in the Mishnah. The second guy is a frugal guy. He's a miser. He doesn't like to give. But what? He says to others to give. Now, let's explain his psychology. Let's understand him. This might be like a fellow that goes around in the synagogue with the cards on Shabbat. You know, he's the first one to go around to solicit others for a donation. And he exhorts them to make a pledge. And the fellow, he bends down the $100 pledge. Please, could you do a little better? Last year he gave us 201, we're looking for 501 this year, and he pressures him. And usually it happens that the guy that comes and solicit, you will not hear his name during the pledges. Because this man, he is so insecure, and he feels that he could not depart with his money. And as much money as he has in the bank, he feels that if he's going to give it away, he's going to lose. That's one interpretation of the Mishnah. But there might be another interpretation. He doesn't like to give, but he lets others give. That's his claim. Lo yiten, aval yiten acherim. Meaning he says, what do I have to give this guy money for? He has a rich uncle. Or why does his brother support him? And he gives all these excuses. I'm not giving, somebody else should give. Yiten acherim, vehu lo yiten. I'm not giving until they give. Now, of course, that is a demented philosophy, because the person that needs the money now, so you're gonna let him starve and you're gonna let him suffer because he has family that is not fulfilling their responsibilities. The Gemara Ketuvot says three words: Melach, Mamon, Haser. What does Melach, Mamon, Haser mean? Salt your money, lose it. The Gemara says, Mashal, in the olden days they used to store meat. How did they store meat? They used to have to salt it. They would put a big heap of salt over a piece of meat, and that would preserve it. Comes a kamsan, miser, he says, no, if I'm going to salt the meat, I'm going to lose all the juice. A 5 pound meat, after you salt it, how big is it? It's 3 pounds. So he comes along and says, I'm not preserving it. What ends up happening? He loses the whole piece. So you have to be willing to give up a little in order to save the principle. So the Gemara says the same thing. Melach mamon. You want to salt your money? Haser. You got to get rid of some of it. Which means you got to lose it. If you hold on to the whole money, then the whole thing becomes spoiled. Just like the piece of meat. You're not willing to give up some of the juice. By salting it, the whole thing becomes rancid. Melech mamon chaser. And maybe that's why in Gemara, how do they call money? Money is called damim. Damim. Now, the word dam we know means blood. Why would they call money damim? Maybe the explanation is because, well, the simple explanation might be is because people work, they're workaholics, and they might consider the money that they earn as blood money. I mean, they travel from one side of the world to the other. They expend a tremendous amount of effort and energy. It means they bring the money home with dam, with their blood. Jeez, that's how difficult it is for them. Yeah, they work hard. But another explanation might be like this. In the olden days, they used to have a process, they still have it around today, of bloodletting. Used to go to the local barber shop, and they used to have leeches, and they would put the leech on the person's flesh, and they would suck out the blood. Or in the real olden days, they used to do it from the hand. They used to take a needle and they used to let blood. There wasn't giving blood for donations. It was a procedure that, to refresh the blood. And the doctors say that sometimes when the blood is in the body and there's an excess amount of blood, the only way to cure a person is how? You gotta let some out. Otherwise, it's damaging. Money is called damim, because it is the same concept. Sometimes a person has too much money, and he doesn't let some out, then already it could be very disadvantageous. And therefore, you also have to bloodlet. You have to let out some of your damim. You have to let out some of your money by giving it. There was once a fellow that had a heart attack, better than not. So he went to the doctor, and the doctor took his blood pressure. So the fellow said, "Doctor, it's my heart that has a problem, not my hand." So the doctor said, "From your hand, we can tell how your heart is." And that's a musar, which means, based on a person's giving, then already we're able to tell what type of heart this person has. And that's what Rav Samson Feral Hirsch explained on the Pasuk. Ish kemetanat yadim. If you want to measure the yardstick of a person, what makes a person an ish? Some people are bigger, more important than others. What's the measuring stick? What's the barometer in measuring ish? And the pasuk says, "Kematanat yado," according to the way he gives. If he's generous, if his hand is very, very easy giving, this person is an ish. And the more he gives, and the more easy it is for him, there's a saying in English: "Give till it hurts." I want to tell you that that's not true. It's the exact opposite. The more a person trains himself to give, the less it hurts. It only hurts in the beginning, where a person has to overcome that nature. But once a person gets used to writing checks and giving tzedakah, on the contrary, the pasuk says, Naton titen. What's the end of that pasuk? Velo yirach lebabecha. Your heart will not be grieved. When? Naton titen. The more you give, on the contrary, it rehabilitates the heart in order to make it much easier. Melach mamon hasir. The Gemara tells us, if somebody gives tzedakah to an ani with a smile, he gets 11 berachot. If a person just gives the tzedakah begrudgingly, so then he gets 6 berachot. So therefore there's a big advantage to give tzedakah with a positive demeanor. Hachamim give a remez. Ha lachma anya. Ha lachma. Ha is 6. He aleph. Lachma. When you give the ani bread, ha, you get 6. An. An meaning anot. You talk to him, you smile, you show him a little warmth. An. Ya. Ya meaning you'd aleph. You get, I want to point out, you get an additional 11 berachot. That means altogether you get 17 berachot for an extra smile, for an extra good word. With this, we explained once the pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says, "Hazoreim b'dema'a b'dinay yiksoru." Those that seed when they're crying, they will reap happily. Zoreim. Tzedakah is considered planting. You take your money and you invest it. It's considered planting. Zoreya tzedakot. So it says, "Hazoreim b'dema'a b'dinay yiksoru." They plant, but they will reap happily. Haloch yelech ubacho. If the person goes and gives charity ubacho, he's crying, meaning he can't stand that he has to give. Haloch yelech ubacho nose meshchazara. He'll get back what he gave. Nose meshchazara. You gave two, you'll get back two. However, boy abobirina nose alumotav. If he gives it joyfully, if he gives it happily, noseh alu motav, he gets back stalks. He gets back much more, and therefore you cannot give it with an attitude or with a certain negativity. Then already it's one for one. Then already it's noseh meshchazara. You get what you gave. However, boyabovirina, when you're giving it happily, oh, you get back noseh alu motav. You're carrying back bushels. There was a story told what's a fact in Worms, France. In the cemetery is buried one of the great Hakamim, the Maharil. Next to the Maharil is buried the Jewish butcher of Worms. A little strange, because usually in the cemetery next to the great Hachamim, they only bury great people of stature. Why would the butcher be zochet to be buried next to the Maharil? You can go see this yourself. So the tradition is that this butcher had a very interesting minhag. He was a very generous guy. What was his minhag? Every Friday, he'd weigh himself, his wife. I don't know how happy she was of going on the scale every Friday, but that's another story. Maybe that's why he wasn't buried next to his wife. But in any event, he used to weigh himself, his wife, and his children, and then the subtotal weight of his entire family, he would take the same amount of meat and give it out to the Aniyim. He was an amazing, generous person. The Maharil said, "This is Sadiq." And therefore, he wants to be buried next to him. There's a type of person that gives tzedakah, but his tzedakah is deficient. How? Halakha says, just like there's welfare today, there was welfare in the olden days. If a person is making a certain amount of money, he does not qualify for welfare. If he's under the number, he qualifies. In Jewish law, if a person has 199 zoos, he qualifies for charity. If he has 200 zoos, he doesn't qualify for charity. Now, if he has 199, he can accept a $10,000 donation. Which means, as long as he's under, he's able to get plenty. Once he has 200, he can't get anything. So there's an ani walking around with 199. He's about to go now, collect a big check, because he earned it, he deserves it, he's ani. Comes some rasha, and he says, I'm giving tzedakah, he gives him one zuz. By giving him the one zuz, now he lost, he caused him a tremendous loss. Incidentally, the gematria of the word tzedakah, how much? 199. To tell you that that's the shi'ud that a person qualifies to accept the tzedakah. You also have some people, unwittingly, they, chas v'shalom, even though they're charitable, they might cause others not to give. How? If a person always gives his charity anonymously, and he tells the solicitor, I don't want my name to be announced. Now, in that case, there might be people sitting in the kahal, and they say, well, I didn't hear Mr. So-and-so's name. If he didn't give, I'm not going to give also. So to have a strict policy to always be anonymous might not be so good at all times. That being said, at other times, a person should adopt the approach of anonymity. And that's what Shlomo HaMelech says in his Mishneh. The Pasuk says, Baboker zera zar'echa vela'erev al tanach yadecha. Shlomo HaMelech says, in the morning, plant your seeds. Vela'erev, in the evening, don't stop. Plant in the morning, plant in the evening. What is Shlomo saying? Sometimes you have to give tzedakah baboker, in the wide open, in broad daylight. Everybody has to know, not for your kavod, but for others. However, vela'erev al tanach yadecha. But in the evening, meaning in clandestinely, you also have to give the tzedakah as well. So both approaches have to be measured, when to be anonymous and when to be public. And what about when you have a fellow comes to the synagogue to collect? We're all familiar with this. And you have the gabai, the shamosh of the shul, we'll call him, or the charity collector. He makes an announcement at the teva, I took care of him already. And therefore now he gives him a small pittance for the whole kahal. Now the fellow wants to go around and solicit privately to each guy, and they stop him. Hey, we gave you ready, this is for everybody. Now, I don't know what type of great offense is it for a guy to go around to try to get a private donation after he was given from the kahal, as a general rule. Everybody has free will. If a person wants to give him, he can give him some more. What is he going to give him? $1 million? So he gives him another few coins? And therefore, it might not be such a good practice to make that announcement, we gave him already, nobody give him anymore. Well, Azi, the guy has to stick his hand out already to get a few more quarters after the shul gave him a certain amount of money. We don't want to be judged that we stopped others from giving tzedakah. That being said, the last guy of the Mishnah, he's a bad guy. He doesn't want to give, and he doesn't want anybody else to give. This is a type of guy that's against public appeals in the synagogue. That's the guy that's on the committee. That when he sits down, he's always the guy that says, we have to pass an amendment in the Constitution to ban solicitations in the shuls. And there's people like that. And unfortunately, they have a toxic effect on others. Their miserly ways spread throughout the synagogue and contaminate those that are around them. And therefore the Mishnah calls this person Rasha. He is no good. because this fellow is stopping others. The best one in the Mishnah obviously is the one that gives and he wants others to give. He doesn't care about his ego. What he cares about is the institution. What he cares about is the plight of the poor man. A very generous man, a veteran giver. He loves to give. It's an opportunity for him to give. There was one fellow, he had a shipment of wool coming from China. Millions of dollars. The boat sunk. The boat sunk. He lost all his money. On the boat, at least. He called up his secretary. I want you to give food packages to all the aliyim of the city. His wife told him, what are you, crazy? Now you're giving food packages? We just lost millions of dollars. How are you giving all this charity? He says, precisely. Look how fragile my assets are. Before I lose everything else, I want to save some to give it to tzedakah. If my money was able to leave me instantaneously like that, it shows you the fragility of the money. The Ben Ish Chai once said, Mashal, you have 10 birds on the roof. Somebody comes and shoots 2 birds. How many birds do you have left on the roof? Answer smart. Somebody would say, none. Another guy would say, well, you shot 2, you have 8. It's both the wrong answer. You have 2 birds left on the roof. The 2 birds that you killed are on the roof. The other 8 fly away. They're not going to stay there when they get shot. So the Ben Ish Chai said, the same thing is when it comes to money. Money has wings. Money flies away. It's very hard to hold the money down. Money, it flies all over. Today one has it, today one doesn't have it. The only way to trap the money is to give tzedakah. The money that you gave to charity, dead. Finished. It can't go anywhere. You cut the wings off of it. It's there. They all now. They once asked the world child, the baron, how much he's worth. He took out his books, he analyzed, he looked. He came out, he gave them a very low figure. His secretary said, you're worth much more than this. You only gave us 20% of your assets. He said, no, sir. He says, I know I have mines. I have real estate. I have business ventures. Tomorrow morning my mines can be flooded and they're gone. My assets, the real estate can crash. My business ventures, eminent domain. The king can take it over. Those are not my assets. Those are questionable. The 20% that I gave to tzedakah, nobody can take that from me. That already is mine. Those are dead birds on the roof. Finished. I cut the wings off. That money cannot fly. Further, I'd like to discuss for a minute an important minhag that we have. Unfortunately, it's neglected and its value is great. And this, everybody can fulfill. The Arizal, in his Sefer, discusses the importance of giving tzedakah before a person prays. In Shachrit, before a person prays the Amidah, the Arizal advises to give specifically 3 coins. And when to give them? During the Vaybarech David, at the time that you get to the section Ve'ata Moshel Bakol, where you say, God, you are in control of everything, he says you should give 3 coins to tzedakah. And not only that, he says how to give it. You should give it 2/3 and then 1/3. Which means if you have 3 quarters, drop 2 and then you drop the 3rd. Which means, he says, according to the Kabbalah, this is very beneficial. In heaven, it makes a great tikkun. It's mechaper for many avonot, and it has great benefit for the giver. A guy was, I'll give a dollar. No, it's not about the dollar. Better to get change and give it 2 and 1. And you want to give the other quarter? Hazak Baruch, Misha Berach. But to give it specifically in that way. Why? Some give the reason there's 3 partners in creation. The mother, the father, and God. And therefore the 2 coins represent the physical part of you, kapara, for what the mother and the father give in creation. And then the 3rd coin is connected to neshama. And therefore we ask God to forgive us for the, maybe we tainted the soul. That being said, the Gemara Berachot writes, a person should not enter the shul until he enters two petahim. Lo yikanes adam lebet hakneset ad shi'avor bet petahim. Two doors. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, two doors? So it means ad shi'ur bet petahim, meaning the amount of time that it takes to walk through two doors. How long that take? Each door, let's say, takes 10 seconds to walk through. Meaning when you walk into the shul, don't start ta'amidah right away. Wait 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and then start ta'amidah. Yeah, you get your bearings. But the Beit Shai explains this Gemara differently. What does bet petachim mean? Don't pray until you open your hand twice. Bet petachim. Open your hand twice. How? The two coins, and then the one coin. And with this he explains the pasuk, ani betzedek, Betzedek means with charity, I will see you, God. But the pasuk says Betzedek, Betzedek, I will greet you, God, with two charities. What's the two charities? The two coins and the one coin. To the extent to show you how important this is, the Bein Ishai's father would even do this on Shabbat. Hold your horses, I'll explain it to you. He used to go on Erev Shabbat, take two coins, wrap it up in the paper, put it on the windowsill. He would take a third coin, put it in a wrapper, paper, put it on the windowsill. On Shabbat he would go to the windowsill, look at the coins, he would say, Ani betzedek, ehazeh panecha, and have kavanah, that those three coins, he's giving to tzedakah. Then on Sunday morning, he would take the three coins and put it in, which means so important was this, he even fulfilled the mitzvah of tzedakah on Shabbat. Now, Baruch Hashem, we have mitzvah of tzedakah on Shabbat. The person gets aliyah. They make him a mishum berach, which is also okay. One time, I had a guy come up to the Sefer Torah. He's a kamsan. They gave him beautiful aliyah. There's only seven aliyot. The shul relies on the income of the aliyot. After the aliyah is over, he walks away. So I said, Misha Barach, instead of Misha Berach, Misha Barach. The guy ran away. He escaped the Aliyah tax. In any event, the Bein Ishai then quotes from the Arizal, a most important concept. When one is giving tzedakah, he says, you have to have the following kavana, that you're spelling Shem Hashem. How? The coin, he says, that's in your hand is connected to the letter Yud. It's in your palm, that's keneged here. You extend your arm is a vav. You put it in the ani's hand, that's a head, the palm. Yud ke, vav ke. And therefore, every time you give tzedakah, you have to have that kabana. Now, what if a guy, he waits for the ani to stick his hand out? So now you're changing Hashem's name. The ani puts his hand out, that's the vav first. And then you have the head. Then the guy sticks his hand and puts it in, you have the Yud, and then it's all backwards. Instead of spelling it Yud Kei Vav Kei, you're spelling it V'haya. You're doing it the opposite way. And therefore the Ari says, be very careful to fulfill the mitzvah. You be the aggressor, to put your hand out first in order to have this kavana. With this we explain the Gemara. Listen to this Gemara. The Gemara on Shabbat, the Gemara talks about Utsdakat Tatsim Bim Mavet. Tzedakah saves a person from death. The Gemara tells the story of Rabbi Akiva's daughter. The sorceress saw that she was supposed to die on the day of her wedding. Rabbi Akiva heard this. Miraculously, she was saved. There was a snake that was about to bite her and kill her. She unintentionally pierced it, right, with the brooch of her hairpin. So Rabbi Akiva saw this and said, oh, you were saved. What did you do today? She says, well, there was an ani, he came to the door. I went out, I gave him charity. Oh, Rabbi Akiva says, mitzvah ka'avad. You did a mitzvah. Chazak Baruch, you did a mitzvah. Of course, we know this is a mitzvah. We need Rabbi Akiva to tell his daughter this is a mitzvah. Peshita, of course, it's a mitzvah. Where's the avera? She went on the day of her wedding and she gave tzedakah. She said, oh, you did a mitzvah? So that's the way we explain this Gemara.
Mitzvah Ka'aba.
Do you know the mystery of the Hebrew alphabet? There's 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. You know Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dal. You know that already. But you know that the Hebrew alphabet is very flexible. There's many different configurations how you could exchange letters. For example, one method is called Atbash. I'll explain to you. Don't get scared. It's something you could understand. You don't need a college degree to understand Atbash. The Aleph, you replace it with a Taf. Finish. At. Aleph Taf. The Bet, you replace it with a Sheen. Now you tell me, who made this up? This is already Halakhah Moshe V'Sinai. Which means when the alphabet was given over, they gave us five or six different games that you could play with the alphabet, and it's emet. As a matter of fact, even in our tefillot, some of them are atbash. For example, Eloheinu v'lohabotenu al ta'asemanu kala. That's aleph. Eloheinu v'lohabotenu. Tochez yadecha b'mishpat. That's taf. Bebo tochehanek decha. Bet. Shemenu mesifrecha al temach. Shin. Gishtecha lahakol musar. Rahamecha yekadimu ruzecha. Dalut ma'asim b'shorecha, karev siddik me'elecha. At, bash, gar, dak, hat, vaf. We can continue if you want. Which means each letter, one for one. What's the at, bash of God's name? Yudke, vavke. Yudke, vavke. Yud is keneged mem. He is keneged tzaddi. Vav is keneged peh. And of course, he is keneged saddi. Mem saddi pe saddi. Mats and then pats. This is a shem kadosh. We're not even allowed to say it straight. That is, this is a shem kadosh. For example, he says, when a person's eating olives, the Gemara says, olives make you forget. That's what it is. If a person's ragil to eat zetin, he loses his memory. Olive oil, on the other hand, is good for the memory. But the Arizal says there's a way to neutralize the negative effect on olives. He says when you eat olives, have kavana. Kel Elokim, mem tzaddi pe tzaddi. Think of that.
Mem tzaddi.
Think of kel Elokim, mem tzaddi pe tzaddi. That kavana, and it'll neutralize the olive. Now you have to have that kavana, because if you're studying olives, you'll forget the kavana. So you have to have before you start eating them. Now watch. What a beautiful explanation. When a person gives tzedakah the right way, we said he's doing yudke vavke. Yes? Beautiful. Yudke in atbash is what? Mem tzaddi. Yes? Yudke is mem tzaddi. What did Rabbi Akiva tell his daughter? Mitzvah ka'abat. You did a mitzvah. Mem tzaddi is yudke. Vavke. Which means he was saying, since you were aggressive and you went to give the tzedakah, the reason why you were saying, because you spelled God's name yudke vavke. He wasn't telling you did a good deed. He was telling a mitzvah ka'abat. You did mem tzaddi, which is keneged yudke. What's the rest of the word mitzvah? Vavke. Mem tzaddi vavke is like yudke vavke. Because the mem tzaddi is yudke. He was saying you spelled God's name. And if you spelled God's name, that's why you're going to get saved. And that's what it says in the beginning of this week's parasha. V'yikhuli teruma. Li, lishmi. Rashi says, give the tzedakah for my name's sake. Let me give it for my name's sake. For my name's sake means, when you give it half kavana, yudke vavke. Lishmi. Have my kavana, the name involved. But we explained it a different way. Li lishmi. Maybe li lishmi means like this. When a person... We're going to celebrate Purim. Haman offered 10,000 talents, silver talents, in order to eradicate the Jewish people. ועשרת אלפים כי כלכסף אשכול על ידי עושה המלאכה להביא אל גנזי המלך. So the Gemara says, it's a good thing that our Shekalim preempted his Shekalim. Because our Torah tells us to give Shekalim also. So God says there was the Shekalim of the Jewish people that give the Shekel to build the Mishkan, half a Shekel. That neutralized Haman's Shekalim. As a result of it, what happened? Haman was destroyed. What does the Gemara say when, as long as Amalek is alive, as long as Amalek is alive, God's name is not complete. God's name cannot be complete as long as there's Amalek. So what does God say? V'yikhudi tiruma dachilak. Give the tiruma li lishmi. Because by giving the tzedakah, what's going to happen? You'll be able to destroy Zaroh Shel Amalek. Once you destroy Zaroh Shel Amalek, my name is going to be complete. And therefore, do it, the Shem Shammai, mean the Shmi, have my name involved. Furthermore, we have a custom at a Brit Milah. I never understood the custom. Maybe we can today offer an interpretation. We collect tzedakah at a Brit Milah. The Siniyat Eliyahu Nevi. They go around, everybody gives a few dollars into the Siniyat Eliyahu Nevi, and they light a candle. Light a candle, I understand. The Chibod Eliyahu Nevi. Eliyahu Nevi comes to the Brit Milah, it's nice to light candles in his honor. But what's the tzedakah? You go to a bar mitzvah, we don't collect tzedakah. Even a pidyon, it became a new minhag that we sell the coins for tzedakah. But for example, the Ashkenazim, they don't sell the coins for the coin tax. He puts it in his pocket, then he goes home. They're not going to sell the coins. So why at a Brit Milah do we have it with tzedakah? The Gemara says, there are three things in life that less is more. One of them is tzedakah. When a person takes from his money and he lessens it by giving, what ends up happening to it? It becomes more. Less is more. You get rid of some of it, like we said, it multiplies. The Brit Milah also. The Brit Milah is the organ of reproduction. You would think if you're going to cut the Milah, it'll stop production. On the contrary, what happened? As long as Avraham Avinu didn't have a Brit Milah, he could not have children. The second he cut the Brit Milah, what happened? He was able to have children. So you see, sometimes even that, less, when you cut the Milah, it brings beracha for Peru Urvu. The third thing is humility. When a person shrinks himself, what ends up happening? He gets more kabod. The people that are unassuming and are low, anava, you end up becoming more. How could you remember these three things? Rashi Tevot Etzim. What does Etzim stand for? Anava, Tzedakah, Milah. Okay. Now we explain what happens. A guy comes to the Brit Milah. He sees the Moher standing up there with a white jacket and sharpening his knife. The father, Abiyah Ben Gesser, says, hey, what's going on over here? We're going to cut the Brit Milah over here today. We're going to do mitzvah. The guy says, Hashem, I said, this is dangerous over here. I want my child to have children. I want my child to be zocher. So what do? We pacify the father. Before the Brit Milah, we go around, everybody's giving money. Everybody's giving tzedakah. It's a message to the father. Don't worry, it's like tzedakah. You give, you take less away, and what ends up happening? You get more. The same thing with the Brit Milah. You cut a little, know what happens? The child is zocher to Peru Urvu. And therefore it's Bifroa Pirahot B'Yisrael B'Hitnadev Am. The Pasuk says, at the time of Bifroa Pirahot B'Yisrael, at the time of cutting the Piri'ah, what are the people doing? B'Hitnadev Am. The people are making donations. To show you it's from the same, it's the same cut. Furthermore, Hakamim tell us in the subject of tzedakah, there's a famous midrash. It's something you should keep in mind at the time you're giving or when you're solicited. The midrash is well known. There were three men, Reuven, Aharon, and Boaz. All did great things in their lives, but the Midrash has a claim against all of them. Had they known that their act was going to be written and documented in the Torah for posterity, they would have done it in a much more heroic fashion, in a much more grander way. Reuven saved his brother Yosef. How? He threw him into the pit with intention to come back. But had he known that they're going to say Reuven saved his brother, if he knew it would have been documented, he would have done it maybe in a much more perfect way. Instead of going back and hiding against the brothers, throwing them in a pit with snakes and scorpions, he would have done it in a much more heroic fashion. And furthermore, had he known who he was saving at the time, what ended up happening with Yosef? Yosef ended up becoming the viceroy of Egypt. He became one of the most influential people of the world. He brought Berachat, his entire family. If Reuven would have known what he was doing at the time, in hindsight, if he knew who he was saving, he would have done it in a much more grandiose way. Aharon came to greet Moshe when Moshe came to redeem the Jewish people out of Egypt. He came out, he hugged them. The Midrash says, if Aharon would have known that the Pasuk says that Aharon went out to greet him, he would have went out with a parade. He would have went out with a band, with a marching band. At that time, he sees Moshe, it's his brother. You're looking at the greatest prophet that ever lived. This man over is Goalan to Israel. This is the man that's going to go up to God for 40 days and 40 nights and get the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't call Anabim. If Aharon would have known what he was doing at the time, so that's his claim on him. Boaz, he told Ruth, Fadali, come to my field, I'll give you lunch. If Boaz would have known that the Torah would mention that Boaz gave Ruth lunch, and if he would have known, who's this lady? This lady over here is the grandmother of the Davidic dynasty.